I wonder if any of you are into like TV series, you like a box set kind of thing. I've seen someone here tonight in a Game of Thrones t-shirt, Brooklyn 99 t-shirt as well, so I know some of you are. Here's a little thing to get you thinking, get you chatting. What is your favourite box set, TV series, film franchise, soap? You can pick any one of those. Share it with the people around you. What's your favourite? Go. Excellent. That'll do. That'll do. We've clearly got some TV addicts here. Well, these are three of my favourite. I don't know if any of you have seen. This dates me a bit, doesn't it? Gosh, I'm just looking at that thinking I should have gone for something more. Modern West Wing, probably my all-time favourite. Watch it kind of quite regularly, dip in and out of that. Anyone seen that?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. People who are of an age. Justified. Has anyone seen Justified? It's about like a deputy in Kentucky. Probably my favourite ever box set. I love it. Did anyone get into Line of Duty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last series, disappointing. Agreed?
No.
We can argue about that later. You know, I love a box set. I love a TV series. Probably too much. I'm still a little bit old school in how I like to watch it. I think I prefer a serial rather than a binge watch. I don't know about you, but I quite like that thing where you've got to wait the whole week to see the next one, and you're talking about it. Line of Duty is probably the only thing recently that's been like that. Come to work, have a little chat with Chris. Did you see Line of Duty? It's really fun. I love it. And also the other thing is if you've got to wait a week, you've got that fun game. If you miss the episode, you've got to avoid the spoilers, haven't you? Oh, don't tell me what happened. But I do get the appeal of the binge watch. Because you know when you get to that cliffhanger, especially if it's sad, you just want to carry on, don't you? You just want to know that everything is going to be okay. You want to skip to the next bit to see if it gets better. Probably the kind of best or worst example of that recently was when we took our family to see Avengers Infinity Wars. Now, my youngest son, Ben, he's 7 years old. He is a big fan of Avengers. Like, he lives it. All his favourite Avengers are the Guardians of the Galaxy, but he loves a bit of Hulk. And he loves Spider-Man. He absolutely loves it. Now, if we'd have been better parents, we would have gone and seen this film before we took our children to it. Because I don't know if you've seen it, but it's the first in two parts. But there wasn't like a week between these two parts. There was a year. And at the end of part one, every character that my son likes dies. Literally. They turn to dust. Spider-Man. Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert. Oh, come on. Who else? That Mantis from Guardians of the Galaxy turns to dust. Black Panther turns to dust. His little face. I mean, it was just appalling. The whole cinema was quiet. And he was silent. And then on the way home, we're trying to cheer him up going, don't worry, they're going to come back. We didn't know. That night, as he got into bed, the poor kid just sobbed. Sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. Go, oh, Mantis! Oh, Spider-Man! It was just awful. And then literally a whole year of waiting for the next one and having to reassure this kid that things are going to get better. It's going to be okay. In fact, when the second one came out, everyone was trying to avoid spoilers, weren't they? Everyone was putting stuff on social media going, don't give me the spoilers. I was going, please just tell me that this is going to end happy. Please tell me this is going to be okay. I've been thinking as I've read through the book of Ruth, that if that was made into a mini-series, and it'd be a really good mini-series, the part that we're looking at this evening, the part that Mark just read for us, let's call it episode one, would be one of those episodes which when you get to the end of it you've just got to skip on to episode two because everything is sad and everything is bad and you really just need to know that things are going to get better. I mean, frankly, it's a bit of a downer. Let's just think about the scenes that were in the passage that Mark read for us. Imagine the credits roll on Ruth, the miniseries, and we first see a famine in the land of Bethlehem. So it starts with famine. And this family in Israel, the kind of head of the family, is called, I find this really hard to say, Elimelech. Say Elimelech.
Elimelech.
It's quite hard, isn't it? Elimelech. It gets all muddled in my mouth. So Elimelech takes his wife and his two sons And he moves them from Bethlehem in Israel where they lived, and he moves them to another country nearby called Moab. Now, this move was to save his family because they were starving. He wanted to find them food. But actually, perhaps something we miss today is it has really negative connotations. Because Elimelech and his family were Jews, and they lived in the land of Israel. And at that time, God's presence was linked to the land of Israel. So if you, as a good Jew, upped and moved out of Israel, it was as if you were moving out of the presence of God, as if you were turning your back on God. So we have this picture of this family led by someone, turning his back on God and taking them away to another country. And that's just scene one. Scene two, it gets worse. Because Elimelech dies. And now Naomi is a widow. She's grieving. She's in a land she doesn't know very well. She's got two little boys to look after. And she's left to raise these sons alone. Scene three, we get a bit of light relief because there's a wedding. And that's good, isn't it? We love a wedding on a mini-series. So her two sons have grown up and they get married. And that's good, except this wedding is tinged with some negativity because they were marrying Moabite women. And that was something that was forbidden by the law of Moses, by the Jewish laws. They weren't supposed to marry anyone that wasn't a Jew. So even this wedding is tinged with sadness. Now, 10 years fly by, so there's probably some kind of montage scene there that someone's going to cut together. And it ends with another really sad occasion when Naomi's two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, die. So now Naomi is a widow. She's in a country she doesn't call home, and she's lost her two sons. Again, she's grieving. At this point, she decides to return home to Israel. Things have got better there. There's some food there that they can have. So she's going to go home to return to familiarity and to return to her family. Now, she's got her two daughters-in-law with her, and they set off with her, but she decides that they'd actually be better off staying, so she tries to persuade them to stay. And they're crying because they're close. And Naomi's saying, stay with your families, don't come with me, I've got nothing to offer you. And Orpah, one of her daughter-in-laws, decides that she will stay. And so she goes back to Moab. But Naomi goes with, Ruth goes with Naomi. And then we have the closing scene. Naomi stood weeping, just being held by Naomi. Naomi being held by Ruth. Cue sad music. Cue credits. That's a downer, isn't it? I mean, what a way to end the episode. We want to move on. We want to know that something good's going to happen. We want to know that things are going to get better. We want a little spoiler. And in reality, I bet Naomi wanted that too. Because this is her life. She probably wanted to know, I need to know that things are going to get better. To be assured that things would be okay. Hey, wouldn't you like that? You know, when you're stuck in a difficult time, things are going wrong, you could like hit a spoiler alert app on your phone. Spoiler alert, everything's going to be better in 6 weeks. And, you know, you could just be assured. But, of course, that is impossible. Because when difficult episodes arrive in our life, and they will, guaranteed, we just have to live through them as best we can, spoiler free. But you know what? Naomi's story gives us some really good guidelines, some principles as to how we can do that. So for the rest of our time tonight, we're going to look at four principles that we can draw from this story to help us survive difficult times. And there might be some spoilers into the rest of the story as we go. So the first principle we're going to look at is this one. Difficult times do not equal bad Christian. Do you know what that little sign means, by the way? Do you recognise that little symbol? Oh, good. You listen to your math. Oh, yeah, that's true. It means do not equal. I'm a teacher. And at the moment, one of the things in teaching is you're supposed to get maths into every single lesson I teach. So if you teach history, you've got to get a bit of maths in. So I'm doing well, aren't I? It's good. That sign means does not equal. So difficult times does not equal bad Christian. And I really, really want you to take this away with you tonight. Difficult times does not equal bad Christian. Now, Naomi has some really tough times in this passage, doesn't she? I mean, these are really tough things that she's going through. But there is no suggestion that her experiences are the result of any wrongdoing on her part. And yet, I suspect she blames herself. Have a look at verse 13. See if you can find verse 13 in that passage. And in that verse, she says, at the end of it, she says, the Lord's hand has gone out against me. The Lord's hand has gone out against me. This is kind of picture, well, you can visualize it, can't you, of God being like, nope. Almost like a picture of punishment. The Lord's hand has gone out against me. You know, perhaps she thought she was to blame for Elimelech's actions in taking them out of Israel. Perhaps there was guilt tied up with that whole move. Perhaps she was caught up in grief for her sons and the guilt that sometimes goes along with that. And she's thinking, I'm failed as a Jew and God is punishing me for it. But like I said, there is no suggestion that Naomi did anything wrong. There is a subtle and destructive thought that many of us have when we experience difficult times. And it's this: there must be something wrong with me as a Christian. There must be something wrong with me as a Christian. You know, things are going well. God's given us the big old thumbs up. Things go bad. You know, God's given us a big thumbs down. And we start to think, perhaps I'm not praying hard enough. Perhaps I'm not spending enough time reading my Bible. Maybe I don't have enough faith. Maybe I'm not working hard enough as a Christian. I want you to hear tonight that that is simply not true. It's a lie. We live in a broken world, and whilst we as God's people have faith that he is at work making all things new, we also understand that we are not there yet. We live in a broken world, and we, as God's people, are not immune to its brokenness. You know, the Bible is pretty clear that we will have difficult times. I always love it in the book of John, where Jesus says to his disciples, you will have troubles. You know, you can't get more blatant than that, can you? So you can be walking in step with God and still experience sickness, loss, and despair. I've written in my notes, see the Psalms. Because Psalms are full of people loving God, having a tough time. I've also written, see the early church. Because the early church was full of people loving God, having a tough time. I've put, see Jesus. Because there was someone who was perfect and yet experienced struggles and suffering. And it's really important that we recognize this, because getting that wrong can lead to all sorts of problems. If we think that difficult times does equal bad Christian, there are many problems that it can lead to. It can lead to shame. So we don't want to tell anyone when times are difficult, because maybe they'll judge us as a Christian. It can lead to stress, because we are working so hard to try and get it right, just so we don't experience difficult times. It can lead to a complete misunderstanding of God's character. So we don't see him as loving, but more as a punisher. And ultimately, it can lead to people just walking away from their faith. Because how tough is that if we've just got to be as good as we can to avoid difficult times? And also, if we accept this, it makes the next thing that we're going to look at far easier. So the first thing Naomi teaches us is that difficult times does not equal bad Christian. And the second is this: share your difficulties. Why do we find this so hard? Maybe have a chat with the people around you. Maybe you don't find it hard, but loads of people find it really hard to share when times are difficult. Maybe share some ideas as to why that might be. Okay. Anyone want to yell out an idea? You don't have to, but did you see? Vulnerability. That's a lovely big word, Chris. Excellent. Vulnerability. Oh no. Just teasing you. Any other ideas? Showing weakness, absolutely. Anxiety, yes, Ian? Oh, so you almost don't want to be a burden.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Good. Yes. And I think as well, sometimes there is that idea that as Christians, we shouldn't really have difficult times. You know, if you have bought into that, then you're not going to want to tell anyone about it. But yeah, fear of how others see us, that we might be seen as weak, that we might be seen as incapable, I think is one. And personality is one. You know, we'll all have that friend who is an oversharer. And then we'll probably all have that mate who, if you say, "Are you all right?" they just go, "Yep," and move on, you know? Personality does have something to do with it. And I also think, although thankfully it's changing, but our culture as British people is that whole stiff upper lip thing, that it's not natural to us in our culture. It perhaps discourages openness. Well, I'm someone who's not a natural sharer. I'm definitely I'm all right kind of person. But I feel I have a lot to learn from Naomi in this passage. You see, Naomi does not try to hide that life is tough for her. She cries openly in this passage, and she shares her feelings and her frustrations with her daughters-in-law, who are obviously the people that she trusts. If you have a look at verses 11 through to 13, that's where Naomi is sharing how she feels. She talks about kind of a lack of hope. She talks about how life is bitter for her. She talks, as I said before, that God's hand has gone out. So she's even able to share that she is frustrated with God. We talk a lot in this church about emotional health, and this is key to it. This is absolutely key, that when we experience difficult times, and we all will, that we don't try to hide it, but that we have people we trust that we can share our difficulties with. Our pain, our disappointment, our frustrations. You know, when my daughter, Josie, was born, she was born very prematurely, and for 3 months she was in intensive care. And Mark and I had to move into intensive care. We lived in a very small room. It was incredibly stressful. And we were in this kind of little unit. And we saw a counsellor, because we were blessed that the hospital we were at was incredibly forward-thinking. And in the neonatal intensive care unit, they had a counsellor that worked there. And we went to see him many times. Poor guy. But I remember him saying to us how many marriages fell apart after these children, these little babies, had come out of hospital. Because people just couldn't deal with it. They'd bottle it all up. And then these feelings would kind of explode afterwards and kind of wreck families. And I know that going to see this counsellor, Mark and I just basically dumping everything on this poor man, I really believe that it helped us to get through that experience in a much healthier way. In fact, I was reading this week about the health outcomes of people who have someone to talk to compared to people who don't. It was for a particular study with people, with women who have breast cancer. And those who had someone to talk to about their feelings recovered much quicker and better, that's not the right word, but you know what I mean, than those who didn't. I also read a study of people who lived to be 100. And they looked at the common traits of these people who lived to be 100. And emotional expression was one of the top traits that they all shared. Because it's good for our health, emotionally and physically. Now, if you're like me, and you're not a natural sharer, please don't freak out. Because I'm not suggesting that you, like, spew out all your intimate details to everybody you meet. But who do you have that you can go to when life is difficult? Who are your Ruth and Orpah? Who are the people that you could go and sit with and just say, I am so frustrated with God? Or I just am in pain. Who are those people? It could be a counsellor, it could be your minister, it could be someone in your home group, or a trusted friend or family member. But we all need someone. And if you don't have anyone, please come and chat to Mark or myself, because we'd be happy to chat with you, or to kind of link you up to people who would love to listen. Also, just as a little aside, I don't know if you noticed this, but at the end, in that last verse, it says, at this they wept again. There's a lot of crying going on in this passage. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. And I love that picture of how to respond to someone. Ruth, it doesn't say like Ruth gave her a lecture. It doesn't say Ruth spent 20 minutes praying for her and then read several psalms to her. It just says Ruth clung to her. Just this picture of Ruth holding her, weeping with her, standing alongside her. And actually for all of us, we can all learn from that as to how to respond to someone who's going through a difficult time. You don't have to give advice. You don't have to have any answers, but being there, holding someone, sitting with them, just being there for them can be enough. Mark and I were reflecting on this earlier because we were talking about when Josie was in hospital. And we had just so much support from people, it was lovely, but we got quite a lot of texts from people and stuff going, it's all going to be all right. And we would go, how do you know? You know, how on earth do you know? Because we were being told by the doctors that it was not all going to be all right. And I don't mean to dismiss that and dismiss kind of their faith in that. But actually, the thing that we found most helped us was one of our ministers at the time, Roland and Alison. You might remember Roland and Ali Clear came and spoke at our church. They came to visit us, and they literally said nothing. They just walked in and hugged us, and then we just cried for ages. And we just stood like that, and that was it. But it was really powerful because we were able to share how we felt and they just held us and listened. So that's perhaps another little takeaway for all of us. I'm going to give you a little spoiler alert though. Spoiler alert symbol. I feel like it should have some kind of klaxon or something. As the story develops over the next few weeks, we will see just a lovely friendship develop between Naomi and her daughter-in-law Ruth. And actually, it's really interesting because Naomi becomes the person that Ruth goes to. And it's Naomi that then gives Ruth advice and helps her. Naomi was never seen as being a bad Jew for reaching out. She was never seen as weak or lesser in her community. It was fine. She shared and then she became a person of strength through that experience. So let's learn from that example. I had a really nice chat with Katie over the break and we were just reflecting on that point about sharing your difficulties. And we were just reflecting together that actually sometimes that's a hard thing for people to do because actually it can be really hard to articulate how you're feeling, to put your emotions and stuff into words. And we were also saying that can also be a very long journey for some of us, particularly if perhaps we've had things from our past or things that are really deeply rooted in us. So I wasn't suggesting you kind of sit down and have a chat and it's all right. That can be quite a long process, which is fine, but, you know, get started on that process. Good. So we kind of are looking at four principles that we draw from Naomi's story about how to survive through difficult times. And we've said difficult times do not mean that we are bad Christians. And we've said share your difficulties with others. And the third thing that we're going to say is this. God is with you. God is with you. Yeah, it's really interested me reading this passage to note that Naomi doesn't lose her belief in a kind and gracious God. If you look at verses 8 to 9, Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, go back each of you to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. In the Message translation, it says, go home and live with your mothers, and may God treat you as graciously as you treated your husbands and me. You know, Naomi recognizes that God is kind. She's recognizing that God is gracious, and she can apply it to Ruth and Orpah, but she cannot apply it to herself because she feels that God has kind of pushed her away. So she still knows that God is there, that he is kind and good, but she just cannot apply it to herself. I wonder if she was thinking, well, how can a kind and gracious God be with me if all this bad stuff's happening? How do I reconcile that? And I really identify with that. I don't know if you do, but I have definitely had those thoughts. I can think of health issues that I've had. I'm thinking, well, how can God be with me in this if this is happening to me? Maybe you relate as well. But the Bible and my experience and the experience of others, including Ruth, has taught me something quite different. That God is with us and at work in us through difficult times. I love Psalm 46 and would recommend that you go home and read it. It says, God is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in times of trouble. I love that phrase, a very present help. He's not just present when we go through difficult times. He's very present, you know, like ultra present. And I'm sure many of us here have kind of have testimonies of times that have been really tough, but in them, you seem almost hyper aware of God's presence. Of course, sometimes though, we just can't feel God's presence when we're going through a difficult time. And that's when faith kicks in and we remind ourselves he is a very present help in times of trouble. I shared about Josie earlier, and during that time, I think I had no energy reserves to kind of have faith for me, if that makes sense. Everything was just being poured out into my daughter. And I know that people around me were the people that held, kind of held my faith secure by saying, God is with you, you know, by being there for me and almost physically demonstrating the presence of God by their presence with me. God is with us in difficult times. Now, I really don't say this glibly. It's not like, oh, cheer up, God's with you. I don't know why I turned into Dick Van Dyke when I said that just now. That was weird. That was weird. But you know what I'm saying? It's not like, it's all going to be okay. Yay, God's with you. Thumbs up kind of stuff. It's not that. But it is, as God's people, our reality. Difficult times are not a sign that God has abandoned us. He is right there with us in them. Just look at the life of Jesus. Jesus went through difficult times and God the Father was present with him. We might not feel it. We might need the faith of others to remind us of it. But it is a truth that we can hold on to. Another little spoiler alert from the book of Ruth is going to come later, but it will cheer us up. As we continue in Naomi's story, we will see her begin to grasp hold of that truth. She begins to realize that God didn't turn his hand and push her away, but rather that God has been present with her the whole way through. And in chapter 2, verse 20, she says this wonderful thing, and I'm going to read it to you from the Message because I love this translation. She says, God hasn't quite walked out on us after all. He still loves us in bad times as well as good. So we've said difficult times don't mean that we're bad Christians. We've said share your difficulties and that God is with us when we have difficult times. And the last point, point number four that we're going to look at is this. There is hope. There is hope. Naomi lost her hope. In verse 12, she says this, even if I thought there was still hope for me. You know, even if I thought there was hope, what she's saying is, I don't think there's hope for me. There's not hope for my future. Next week, we're going to read how she goes on to want to change her name to reflect this. She says, don't call me Naomi anymore. Naomi means sweet, but call me Mara. And that word means bitter. So she literally wants to change her name to bitter. That would be like one of us having a really rubbish few weeks. and then going, right, I want you to call me rubbish from now on. My name is now Rubbish Massey to reflect my life. You call me rubbish because that's how I feel about my future. Rubbish. It's quite a strong statement. She lost hope, a hopeless outlook on the future. And again, I can identify with her. You know, I've shared before here that as a teenager, in my kind of teenage years, and then perhaps into my early 20s a bit, that I struggled with mental health issues. And there were times in there that I would describe myself as hopeless, because I just couldn't see how it could end. In fact, if you've ever had depression, and if you're struggling with depression in particular, that is something that steals hope from us. It steals our hope. But my story, and Naomi's story, and God's story written down here tells us that there is always hope. And do you know what? It's not like an airy-fairy, things are going to get better kind of hope. And it's not saying that everything is going to work out the way that we want it to. But this is a confident, certain hope that God can bring change and healing and joy. That he can restore our lives. That he can turn the mourning into dancing again for each one of us. It is a hope that is rooted in the steadfast love that God has for us. A love that he demonstrated in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And isn't that the ultimate act of hope? Life beating death. Light beating darkness. New beginning. You know, this is the ultimate spiritual spoiler alert. Because at some point as well, we have hope that there is going to be no more crying, no more pain, no more death, as God wipes away our tears and ultimately we live with him forever. This hope transcends our feelings, it transcends our circumstances, and it transcends the things that we see as final. There is always hope. And you know what? It does require something from us. It requires us to flex our spiritual muscles a little bit. There's a book in the Bible called Lamentations, and it's lamenting, you know, it's sorrowful book. But there is this part of it that is just glorious. You might know these words. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. And it goes on to say, and I'm going to try not to sing it to you, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. But I always love that first bit, yet this I call to mind. Because we have to kind of bring it into our minds sometimes. Or if we don't feel we've got the strength to do it, we need to surround ourselves with people that can do it for us. How can we bring this to mind? Well, we can reflect on what God has done in our lives. We can reflect on what we've seen him do in the lives of others. We can read the Bible and learn some Bible promises. We can listen to sermons and music that raise that hope up within us. And we can surround ourselves with people that are going to cheer us towards hope. And here is my last spoiler alert for the book of Ruth. Please do come back for the other ones though, because I feel really guilty. Naomi finds hope. There is a happy ending coming. But let's remember that Naomi had no idea of that at this point. She had to live through these difficult times. Just like we won't know what's going to happen in the future when we face difficult times. But we can learn from her experience that difficult times do not mean that we are bad Christians. That sharing our difficulties is really going to help us in our journey. We can learn that God is with us in our difficult times. And lastly, that there is hope. And then we can learn to say with Naomi, he still loves us in bad times as well as good.